The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is April 3rd, 2023, to be rebroadcast on April 5th at our regular times on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening right now on Facebook Live, you can leave your comment right down here in the little box down there, and Fran or I will try to get back to you. If you are listening to this in an audio file podcast, you can simply send me an email at bicycletalk, @gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, Spotify, iTunes, or now FMRadioFree.com. Ron's rant of the week. So I'm listening to my radio this morning as I'm driving up to the community center because it's still not quite warm enough for me to get on my butt and ride my bike up there.
It was in the 20s this morning.
It was in the 20s this morning. So once it gets warmer, I'll start riding my bike to teach class, and then I'll ride my bike home, and then I can, you know, participate in the Peddlin' Ron challenge of not using my car for a day. And we'll see if we can do something about that. But this morning I was in the car, so I caught a very short and brief piece of an NPR story about employers paying for and providing parking spaces for employees. So I unfortunately was running on a time frame that I needed to get out of the car, so I did not end up finishing hearing the story, and I'm not 100% sure what was going on there, but it spurred me to think that maybe what we need to do here is, what did I have here? Why are we paying for employees to park their cars and not paying for employees to park their bikes? We're going to talk about that a little bit more in the show, and we are going to try to bring up some points of some places that are doing that and most places that are not doing that. So anyway, that's my rant of the week. That's where I'm at. Oh, nope, there's more on the rant, of course. And this is a shout out to Billy Dujack, who is going to go enough on the basketball stuff, but I have to do a little bit of basketball stuff. We're kind of in the middle of like crazy March Madness right now.
He's listening.
And I know he is. That's why I called it out. So, hey, NCAA, you got the women's tournament, right? How about the men's? 9:20 tonight? Really? 9:20? I want to watch my Huskies play in the final game this evening and win the final game this evening. That's what we're shooting for anyway. But 9:20 p.m., I got to get up tomorrow morning and teach a class, man. Anyway, frustrating. But I am going to stay awake, and I'm going for the duration. So there we go. Go Huskies. Yay. Positive side. The positive side is it is the men's final tonight. If you have not been watching, it has been both in the men's and the women's tournaments, there are no number one seeds that are in the national championships. Either or. It was kind of pretty exciting, pretty wild. Good times if you're a college basketball fan. And we live in the middle of college basketball here in Stores. So, shout out on last week's post and a comment about parking the car. And I had made a comment, and I had showed a picture of, actually, I've got it on my main screen on my computer right here now, and it shows a cluster of cars, obviously traffic, you know, five lanes wide, six lanes wide on a highway, and it shows cars being powered by gasoline, and then it shows cars being powered that are hybrid, and then it shows cars being powered that are hydrogen, and cars being powered that are electric. And guess what? The number never changes. It's the same congested mess each and every time. No matter what we do, we are going to put we're just going to substitute the energy for the automobile or the truck, and we're going to continue to clutter our highways. That was the whole point made. So I made a comment to it, and I said, do I need to say it again? Take the pedal and run challenge, park your motorized vehicle once a week, and use your bike instead. Our time has come. Your health, fitness, and your planet are begging you to change your evil ways. So Bobby Olson writes back to me, and he says in a comment, doing it today. I got one. So that's one. I'm sure there will be more. I am certain there will be more. But there's somebody who heard me. Bobby lives up in Massachusetts, and he parked his car for a day, and he rode his bike. So each and every one at a time, whatever I have to do, let's try to get the cars off the road and the bikes on the road. This is a good thing. It's all a really, really good thing. So I want to also point out, just because it is April, well, there's 2 months of importance and interest coming up right now. Right now, we are in April. Next month will be May. May is Bike Month, and we'll be talking a lot about Bicycle Month, Bike Month events, including the Ride of Silence that we're doing here in Storrs, Connecticut. But one of the things I wanted to exercise in April is Saturday, April 22nd, is Earth Day. Remember Earth Day? Do you remember that? We had Earth Day back in that was back in the days when the cars were really disgusting and gross, and you know, you could smell them a mile away. Which brings a point. Have you been behind an automobile that was manufactured back in the 70s lately on your bicycle? Whew, wow. It's hard to believe that they were all like that, and we didn't even notice back then. Now we've got so many emissions restrictions on the cars and so much equipment to keep the cars running cleaner, you don't smell them very much, not nearly as much as you used to. But boy, you get behind something that was manufactured back in the 70s and it's PU. Ugh, it's gross. And also you can visibly see the exhaust coming out of the vehicle, which is spewing all sorts of terrible things in the environment. So Earth Day came along. I don't even know when Earth Day started. Fran can check that out for us and let us know when Earth Day was originally established. It seems to me it was back in the 70s. I believe it was like right around the time of, Ralph Nader and all that, which Ralph Nader did a lot of really good things for our environment, and also alerting us to things like cars that blew up when you hit them and, you know, other various things that were out there that were dangerous for us. But anyway, Earth Day came along, and all of a sudden we were out, you know, picking up garbage and cleaning up our streams and cleaning up our rivers and you know, trying to do things that were really, really good for the environment. And, you know, really one of the best things you can do for your environment is ride your bicycle. It's Bicycle Talk. This is what we talk about. This is what we do here. We talk all about bicycles and why bicycles are a wonderful thing. So anyway, Earth Day is April 22nd. So we'll celebrate this month by riding our bikes more, right? Right. That's a good thing, because then you have happy Earth instead of sad Earth. And sad Earth is pretty prevalent everywhere these days, especially when it becomes a political issue. It's really unfortunate that we have to make it all political, but that's kind of the way things get done in the world. I'm not real happy about that, but that's what happens. So anyway, Earth Day is Saturday, April 22nd. I just wanted to bring that up. And there is an Earth Day pledge in here somewhere.
Do you want me to...
Tell me about Earth Day, Fran.
Okay. So I found from this company called Paper and Packaging, this is the history of Earth Day. Mm-hmm. The 1960s saw a dramatic uptick in environmental concerns in the U.S. with several environmental catastrophes, particularly the Santa Barbara oil spill and the Cahoga River fires of 1969.
Oh,
You remember that?
I do.
Oh, gosh. Many Americans felt it was time we take a more active approach in the stewardship of our planet. Gaylord Nelson was one of these people. And inspired by these environmental disasters, the junior senator from Wisconsin established the first Earth Day on April 22, 1970, to bring light to the issue of environmental responsibility and transforming the public's attitude. Inspired by the Vietnam War protests across the nations, Gaylord organized a teach-in on college campuses along with Congressman Pete McCloskey and activist Dennis Hayes. The group chose April 22nd, a weekday falling between spring break and final exams, to maximize the greatest student participation. Of that first Earth Day, Nelson wrote in an article for the April 1980 issue of EPA Journal, it was on that day that Americans made it clear that they understood and were deeply concerned over the deterioration of our environment and the mindless dissipation of our resources. That day left a permanent impact on the politics of America. In short, Earth Day launched the environmental decade with a bang.
There you go. So there it is. That's Earth Day. That's what it's all about. It's a big deal. And again, you know, if we can, as collectively as a group of bicycle advocates, because we're very into this, if we can make our own little splash and continue to ride our bikes and continue to think twice about the trips we make and how we can use our bikes to do a lot more than we realize. And it's not just a recreational vehicle as it has been in this country for so long. Hi, Patrick. How you doing today? He's in Singapore. Yeah. We have listeners from all over the world here on Bicycle Talk.
And he gave us green hearts for Earth Day.
Green hearts for Earth Day. Very clever. Very clever. Like it. Good. So, this is the time. This is the year that you're going to make these changes, right? Right? Let's do it. Let's just all do it. I think it's a really, really great idea. If it makes you feel better about yourself, then wonderful. If it connects to maybe a neighbor or a coworker or a family member and they move on and they start doing the same thing, you're doing your job. You're doing what you need to do. You're taking your environmental responsibility, and the bicycle is just the easiest way to do it. Of course, walking is good too. Using the bus instead of using your car, where you can get on a bus that has 40 people on it versus a car that has one person in it, is another great way to do it. There are definitely answers here, but let's make 2023 the year that you decided to make this decision and move forward on this. Remember, the cost of operating and owning a motorized vehicle is way, way higher than the cost of operating or owning a very expensive bicycle. So you can treat yourself, buy yourself a really, really nice bike, and or maybe two or three, or what is it, Fran? N+1,
yeah.
And have a whole fleet of them if you want. Different bikes for different purposes, whatever, for way less than owning a motorized vehicle. And you know, the world will be smiling because of it. It'll be a really good thing. And, you know, the automobile companies won't be smiling. The petroleum industry won't be smiling. But you know what? Too bad. Too bad. So anyway, one at a time, we grab people and we get them out there and we get them out riding their bikes, which is really, really, really cool. And like Bobby Olson, our listener from Massachusetts, who has decided, you know what? This was the day to do it. And he felt so good that he wrote me a little note. So there you go. If you decide that you're going to take a day and take on the Pedal and Run Challenge, be sure to make a note of it. You can make a note of it right here at Facebook. That would be fine. Or you can drop me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I'd love to hear about your experience of not using a motorized vehicle for a day. So pass it on. I'll read them out every week as I get them. That's really cool. Hey, maybe one day I will have to spend the entire show reading out all the responses. There's a challenge for you. All right. So anyway, enough on Earth Day. Earth Day is a good thing because there's so much more to talk about. And the next thing I have on my list, of course, is, and we will get back to this in other ways, but anyway, starting with right now, we're going to the Mechanical Minute and cycling tips. So I got a call from a friend, and he said, my bike's still making that clicking noise, Ron, you know, and we thought we had it. And I had attended to this a few weeks back, maybe 3 weeks ago or so. And there was definite looseness of the pedal in the crankset, which is a classic. I can't find it click, a quarter turn or less, and it goes away. That didn't do it. Okay, so it didn't do it, and he said, you know, it's still doing it, and I'm also having some problems with my shifting. Well, come to find out, the problems with the shifting, and this is another classic thing, is he has Shimano STI shifting on his bike, and he was getting kind of a almost like a ghosty kind of shifting thing going on, or a not shifting or a hesitant shifting on a mechanical unit. And I know all you electric people are all going, well, just go DI2 and you can take care of the problem. Well, not everybody has DI2. Not everybody wants DI2. But anyway, I brought it in and I fiddled with it and went, oh, that's really weird. And he goes, is it a cable? And I went, no, the cable's fine. I kind of checked the cable, because that's the first thing you go for. Take a look at the cable, see if it's in any way being restricted or stiff in any way. It was the lever. Shimano STI levers, when sitting over periods of time, especially if it happens to be winter and you haven't looked at your bike for a while, they gum up a little, they get a little stiff, and you have to use a very, very light lubricant in the inside of them. The best way to do this is to flip the bike upside down, and if you have a repair stand, that's very easy to do, or if you can just do it on the floor or whatever you have to do, but flip the bike upside down and shoot some lubrication into the lever and around the lever. Again, a super light type of lubricant is best, because you don't want to get anything really gummy in there at all. And then shift it up and back and up and back and up and back a bunch of times. And the next thing you know, you've got no more hesitation in your shifting. So it happens. Make sure after you've done that, you take a rag and dry it off real good afterwards, so you don't have anything seeping down onto your hands and all that. You don't want that. But that's the way to take care of that problem. So sure enough, I did that, and it solved the problem. But then there was the creak and the click that was still there. Good morning, Kim. So anyway, I went, well, let's see. So we did this, we did that, and I couldn't really see anything obvious. I went, you know what? Here's one that's a mystery that always happens to bikes. And so I pulled the seat post out, the carbon seat post, out of the carbon frame. It was a very tight fit, and it was a very, 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 very dry fit. So I went, aha, there it is. And yeah, you would think, why would a seat post make noise? Well, they do. They do. Even though carbon fiber is really, really crazy stiff and doesn't flex a whole lot, it flexes enough when you're really bearing pressure down on your bike so that you can get a little bit of a click from it. I pulled it out and I use some carbon paste on it. And if you're not familiar with carbon paste is, it's a grease, and it has just a very, very fine, fine grit in it. And here it is. Let's see here. Apply a light coating of paste grease with your finger and put the bike post back in. And what it is, it's made by a number of different manufacturers. The one I have is made by a company called Finish Line, and they make a lot of different lubes and different applications that you can use for your bike. So you put it on there with your finger, and you're really just ever so thin coating, just enough so that the post is no longer dry. Also, I also wipe the post down before I put it on there, just so So it's been cleaned a little bit when you do that. It's kind of a must-have for your toolbox. It's really, really a thing that you, if you have any carbon parts at all on your bike, a carbon stem, a carbon seat post, anything at all, really, that's carbon fiber, you want to have a fresh tube of carbon paste around because it works really well. And there are, of course, comments out there. Leonard Zinn from VeloNews, who is kind of a bicycle guru type who has been around for a very long time, says no grease unless the fit is really tight. And I say grease it. I don't care. Just grease it. Yes, greasing a post with just plain grease could be not such a good answer because it may slip because, you know, you don't have anything that you're putting lubrication in there. And not only that, you're also putting a desponding agent in there, which is really good. But the assembly grease, carbon assembly grease, is generally recommended for carbon on carbon seat posts and also stem to carbon handlebars. So it really works. And having that little bit of grit in there makes the difference. I've even had problems with people are having problems with their seat posts slipping. And I use a little bit of that carbon paste, even if it's an aluminum post going into an aluminum frame, use a little bit of that paste and it just sets it real nice and it doesn't slip anymore. So that's my mechanical minute and cycling tip of the week. Get yourself a nice little tube of carbon paste or carbon grease paste, whatever you want to call it. It's a good thing. So anyway, let's see what else we got here for today. According to Bicycling, a startup that created a rewards platform, 70% of the people think that the best incentive for them to ride to work is, hang on, are you ready for it? Cash. Yeah, people respond to money. Okay, by paying staff to cycle to work, companies benefit more from the savings. They have less sick leave, improved satisfaction, blah, 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 blah. You know, the rest is obvious. It's obvious to us because, you know, we're one-sided here. We are Bicycle Talk, so, and we are also preaching to a large choir here of people who are bicycle enthusiasts, but this is why it is okay for you to go to your manager at work and say, hey, I think we should have a discussion about transporting ourselves to work and either using a bus or using a bicycle and having some incentives for it. What do you think? And Then you can get into the research of it. And when you do that, you're going to find that it doesn't happen very much here in the United States, of course, because we are such a car-centric country. So, but it does happen in other places in the world. And that is something you need to understand. It may sound foreign to Americans, but being paid to cycle to work on a pedal, a bicycle, or an electric bike is common in many countries. Interesting, huh? So let's see here. I had something highlighted. So these countries pay people to ride bicycles and e-bikes to work. Shouldn't the U.S. too? This comes from an article from Electrek, which is obviously a electric bike company. It may sound foreign to Americans, but being paid to cycle to work on a pedal bicycle or electric bicycle is common in many countries. While bicycles are still popular forms of transportation, many more workers are now switching from four wheels to two thanks to the proliferation of electric bicycles. Electric bicycles work like traditional pedal bicycles, but include an additional electric motor and battery to assist the rider, taking the edge off of hill climbing and higher speed riding. Many riders favor e-bikes for allowing them to arrive at work without breaking a sweat, while still getting in some heart-healthy, modest physical activity twice a day. The bike-to-work programs found in most countries usually take in the form of a tax incentive, where tax-free bonuses are added to an employee's paycheck each month for cycling to work instead of driving a personal car. And the programs are so successful that they're continuing to grow. Belgium just increased its bike to work incentive to 0.25 euros per kilometer, approximately 45 cents a mile, according to Light Electric Vehicle Association. The 5-mile commute to work could equate to over $1,000 a year, tax-free, straight into your pocket. And that's not even including all the health benefits and the potential to drop a hole or two down in your belt. Good thing, right? Belgium isn't alone in offering cash in exchange for pedaling to work. The Netherlands offers nearly as much, and the UK offers even more. The mileage allowance of around 26 cents per mile is available to British cyclists who use their bikes to commute to work, according to the World Economic Forum. The UK also offers a lease-to-own incentive program that rewards cyclists with discounted bikes and cycling gear. Companies have to elect to partake in these programs, but the government refunds the incentives paid out to the employees. Some companies even go above and beyond. This particular article, they spoke to GoCycle founder Richard Thorpe about the company's high-tech folding electric bikes. He discussed how GoCycle had created a generous incentive to encourage its employees to ride to work. Okay, here's the example. At GoCycle, we introduced a UK-first policy that sees the business pay its employees 40, that must be pence per mile, approximately 55 cents, when they commute to work by e-bike rather than using their car. There are countless studies that show that encouraging cycling reduces sickness levels and contributes to a more productive, healthier, and happier workforce. Even tiny Luxembourg offers a tax incentive of about $340 US for buying a bicycle to commute with. Across Europe, there are over 300 tax incentive and purchase assistance schemes for bike-to-work programs, according to the European Cyclist Federation. These programs are aimed at realizing the number of advantages offered by replacing cars with bikes. The more people riding bikes and fewer cars clogging the roads, cities operate more efficiently, studies have found, and even at 10% switch from cars to bikes can reduce traffic congestion by about 40%. 10% by 40%. Fewer cars also means reduced emissions, cleaner cities, and there's a myriad of health benefits offered by cycling, which many studies have found are provided by both pedal bikes and electric bikes. So all of this begs the exact same question. Should the U.S. incentivize cycling? Mr. Buttigieg, are you listening? Are you listening? Yeah. This is something we really might want to take a really solid look at. Mm-hmm. So an allowance of up to $240 a year for cycling expenses used to be included in the U.S. tax code. Did you know that? I didn't know that. But it was removed as part of former President Trump's Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Well, surprise, surprise. I'm getting political. I'll stop. But that could be changing, even if the chances look slim. In addition to the electric bike tax credit that was proposed as part of Build Back Better Act, a pre-tax incentive of over $80 a month is included for biking to work, according to the Sierra Club. That's something to look into. Paying people to choose an alternative form of transportation that is beneficial to cities and citizens alike is a solid first step, but it isn't enough by itself. Investments in safer cycling infrastructure are also key to helping move more commuters towards substantial transportation options. So I agree with that to a certain extent. I'm also a really, really firm believer of more bikes on the road makes the road safer because of the visual aspect to seeing more bikes out there changes the mindset of those driving the motorized vehicles because, you know, yeah, some of them will say, that bike's in my way. I'm late for work. I've heard the argument. I've heard it plenty of times. But at the same time, it will they will learn from that, that, you know what, there's bikes on the road now, and I have to allow myself 5 more minutes to get to work or 10 more minutes to get to work than I used to. Or maybe, just maybe, I should probably join the revolution and start riding my bike to work. This is all good, good stuff. And I am leading this into, you know, starting out with Earth Day and April, and as things start changing with our weather, and, you know, I'm looking at 22 degrees this morning. I didn't really want to do it, so I held off. But as the weather starts to get warmer, I'm going to start using my bike a lot more to transport myself, not just as a recreational vehicle. And the fun thing about that is if I use it to transport myself to, let's say, the gym so I can teach my class, and then I transport myself home, I've got the recreational done. I've taken care of the time that I want to put into my body and taking care of my body physically. And, you know, it all kind of pays off. You get both out of it. And hey, if you want to ride your bike on the weekend recreationally with your friends, because, you know, that's something you do socially, is you belong to a bike club or whatever, and you like to go for rides with everyone, and you've been riding through the week and just using it as commuting, you're building a physical base underneath you so you can get out there and enjoy yourselves when you're riding with your friends. So it's all a good thing. Boy, oh boy. So as countries across Europe have proven, investing in cycling nets benefits for all. Perhaps it's time the U.S. woke up and smelled the roses. So anyway, this is all good stuff. And it's something that I think we need to start looking at, focusing on. If you're in the workplace and you're with others who listen to your constant banter about how much everyone should be riding a bicycle because, you know, you believe in this cause, strike up the conversation, have a chat. And, you know, you're going to get a lot of naysayers. You're going to get a lot of people who go, oh, I just don't have time for that. I can barely get out of the house in time to get to work, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, part of the reason you can barely get out of the house in time to get to work is because your physical activity level is so low that you have no energy when you wake up in the morning. And when you change over and start riding your bike more, everything else changes over too. And you wake up a lot more inspired when you're already feeling fit and healthy. So there's a two-way street here. It really does help you gain the incentive to ride your bike to work. And when all of a sudden it becomes a, you know, the people that work in my block at work, three of them are now riding their bikes to work, then, you know, people start looking around and go, you know what? What's the story with this riding your bike to work? How do you do it? What do you do to prepare for it? How do I deal with the fact that it might rain out? What, you know, and people start asking questions. Once they start asking questions, you have cast the line into the water and you have baited the hook, and now you're going to start reeling them in. And how cool would it be? And I remember this with my friend Richard when we had the COVID sensations and also energy crunches and all that. And, you know, he rides his bike to work all the time. And when we started having this happening, all of a sudden there were 3 or 4 more people joining him on his commute in, and that grew to 5 or 10 people, and that grew to a couple of dozen people. And as they went along and they go by a neighborhood, they would pick up another person. He lives up in the Boston area. They'd pick up another person that people would actually wait for the quote-unquote Peloton to come through and then hop in once it came through so that it was a safer ride, because you see that big a number on the road. Yeah, it blocks the road, sure. But at the same time, it gives you a sense of protection because everyone's like-minded. You stay in your lane, you stay on your side of the road, but you can actually have a much safer trip in when you get more and more people in numbers riding down the road. You also send a message that is, hey, come join us. You know, Come on, hop on. This is great. We're going to get to work 10 minutes before you are because we don't have to deal with this problem area or that problem area. We don't have to deal with getting stuck in traffic, which a lot of people spend a lot of time stuck in traffic. Here's one for you. The next time you're stuck in traffic, start a timer. See how long you're stuck there. Now, take that number and compute it out to how far down the road could I get if I had this much time and I was on a bicycle and I was riding at 10 miles an hour. You'd be surprised. You know, you're wasting a lot of time stuck in that car, stuck in traffic when you could be outside, getting good fresh air, enjoying the day, going to work with a fresh start, with a fresh mind, ready to go. And, of course, my favorite part of it all, parking your non-motorized vehicle, your bicycle, right next to the door instead of having to walk, you know, a quarter of a mile to get to work because you're in this giant parking lot. And then having to deal with, at the end of the day, getting out of that mess. And it's awful. It's awful. I talk to people that sometimes it takes them up to 10 minutes to get out of their parking lot so they can get back on the road to drive their car home. 10 minutes down the road, you're a ways down the road. You're quite a ways away from that parking lot, that's for sure. These are all things you have to think about, and you have to put it into reality and common sense and see if it will work for you. You know, it probably will take you longer to ride your bicycle to work, but it probably isn't that much longer, especially when you have heavy traffic. You'd be really, really, really surprised. So anyway, that's me ranting away, as I always do, about why we all should be riding bicycles and how we can all save the world. And, you know, I got a firm belief about this. So we're going to continue to preach it. And I know that there's lots of you out there that understand this and are participating in it. I also know that there's lots of people out there that listen to the show that are cycling advocates in a way of they use their bikes for recreation, they may race their bicycles, they don't look at the bicycle as a transportation unit the way others do. And, you know, if I can just, you know, twist your arm a little bit, get you to go in that direction just a little bit more, you'd be surprised. You know, you have the ability, you got the legs, you got the lungs, you got the body to do it. Just take a look at it and see. So let's move on here. That's enough of that. California's record amount of rain and snow. this is according to WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, home to the Sea Otter Classic, is in good shape and should pose no issues for exhibitors and consumers at the April 19th through the 22nd show. Keep in mind that the Sea Otter Bicycle Classic is, I believe, one of the largest consumer shows in the United States. And it's just a lot of fun. I've been there. I have participated in it. I used to work for a company that was based out of Morgan Hill, California, which is where Specialized Bicycles is from. It wasn't them. It was somebody else. But it's a really big event, and it's a big mountain bike race. They also now have a road race involved, but it's a huge consumer show. It's really cool. It's very, very cool. And the mountain bike race, the cross-country course is gorgeous. You're up in the hills and it's just beautiful. And it's a pretty place to go if you ever get a chance to go there. The Sea Otter Classic, it's a big deal. So anyway, looks like all that rain, all that snow, all those problems they're having in California have not landed quite there. So that's a good thing. That's a really, really good thing. And that's near that, you know, Morgan Hill, maybe San Jose-ish area, kind of south of San Francisco, I believe is where that is. But anyway, the Sea Otter is on. We'll keep in touch with that and see what happens and see what new and wonderful things are revealed at the Sea Otter Classic this year. Time bicycles. Okay, anybody out there have a time bicycle or remember the original carbon fiber fork that first hit the market? It was made by a company from France called Time. And Time has been a leader in carbon fiber technology for many, many years. And they have unveiled plans to open a carbon frame factory in South Carolina. How about that? There's a switch. Okay, so we're talking about all of these companies that are going in the other direction. They're going over to Asia to have things manufactured. And Time Bicycles announced plans on Thursday for the nation's largest carbon fiber bicycle manufacturing facility after acquiring 140,000 square foot factory near Landrum in South Carolina. So that's kind of that came out about, I don't know, maybe a week ago, a little over a week ago is when that announcement happened. But that's kind of a cool thing. We're going to keep our eyes on that and see what's going on. It's really nice to see companies looking at manufacturing here, which does cut down a lot on import tariffs and, you know, issues they have with shipping and all that. And I remember when carbon fiber, we had a lot of carbon fiber that was made in this country, and then it slowly but surely started shipping away and away and away and away, and there was not a whole lot of carbon being manufactured in this country after that. So not in bicycles anyway. Aerospace industry probably a little different, but anyway, it's just kind of a cool thing, and I wanted to bring it up. Speaking of bringing things up, and I've been talking about it for weeks and weeks and weeks. Let's see here. Maybe I should go to, I'm going to go to the Tour of Flanders. Tour of Flanders was last weekend. Tour of Flanders is always one of the classics. It's one of the cobble classics. It's a big deal. And in the women's race, Latke Kopecky, she flew solo to repeat her win at the Tour of Flanders. A year after her first victory, Lottie, who rides for Team SD Works, won a second Tour of Flanders in a row, attacking on the Oude Quarmont and soloing to the finish. Behind Kopecky, a group of seven riders fought for the remaining podium spaces. So anyway, congratulations to Lottie, and on a brilliant win, she soloed away from them and took it. It seems like this is becoming a pattern with the women. It's also kind of a pattern with the men in the classics too, these solo riders that just blast off and are able to hold it off until the very end. But anyway, she is a Belgian superstar, and it's the Dutch and the Belgians, they're like cooking in bike racing these days. Really, really cooking. So anyway, and on the men's side, Tadej Pogačar, we know that name, right? We know him from Tour de France fame. Just an amazing rider. He took a spectacular lone victory at the Tour of Flanders after distancing Matthew Vanderpool, who did this the previous week, by the way. Matthew Vanderpool did this in the race the previous week. And his other big name rivals on the final climb in an epic battle on the roads and climbs of Flanders. The race appeared to have escaped by the big three of Pogačar, Vanderpool, and Wout van Aert after a group of 10 riders opened a 3-minute gap after attacks came with 100 kilometers to go. However, Pogačar inspired a comeback and determined chase and then surged past the last attacker and went on to the final time up that final climb. The Slovenian time trialed to the finish, extending his lead into a headwind. The high-speed racing meant the 2023 Tour de Flanders set a new record average speed of 44.083 kilometers per hour. God, these guys are going fast. It's unbelievable. And that's, you know, again, these are very long races. It's kind of a wild thing. So that brings me back to guess what's going on next weekend? Here it is. It's the Hell of the North. It's the Paris-Roubaix. Yeah, here comes the Paris-Roubaix. It's right around the corner. I have a weather forecast here because, you know, it's important to know this. If it rains, it's just an awful race. If it doesn't rain, It's just an awful race. There are so many places where there are cobbles, and I'll get to that in just a minute. It's such a treacherous place to race your bike. But what it looks like so far, I pulled down a weather report, and it looks like we're going to see on Wednesday, fog with some sun, high around 53 degrees. Thursday, mostly cloudy and a little rain, high around 49 degrees. Friday, a couple of showers, 50 degrees. And then Saturday, it's 53 degrees, clouds and breaks of sun. And on Sunday of the race, 50 degrees with low clouds. So it's going to be dry. And so what's better, wet or dry at the Paris-Roubaix? Good question. If you ask the riders, they're going to say it doesn't matter. It's terrible either way. But, you know, when it's wet, obviously it gets slippery because you're on these rounded cobbles. And these are the cobbles that, of course, the goats and the sheep have cleaned off from the Bicycle Talk episode a week ago. So the cobbles are really, you know, they're polished stones from, I don't know, the 1100s. Is that when they put in the cobble streets? Is a long time ago. And so they're really like smooth and they're really slippery, whether they're wet or they're dry. If they're dry, there's like a dust on them, and the dust is almost as slippery as the wet is. So no matter how you look at it, it's a tough, tough race. And it looks like the weather will be, I would say, mostly dry as far as the weather goes. So we'll find out next weekend. As I always say, you know what the weather's going to be tomorrow? It's going to be what it is when you get up. And that's the way it is. And you cannot depend on it anymore. So anyway, the hell of the north. Here we go. So what is the Paris-Roubaix? Well, the Paris-Roubaix is a one-day professional bicycle road race in northern France, starting north of Paris and finishing in Roubaix at the border with Belgium. It is one of cycling's oldest races, and it is one of what they call the monuments of classics of the European calendar, and contributes points towards UCI world ranking. The most recent edition was held on the 17th of April in 2022. Now we're coming up this weekend for the 2023 edition. It is famous for the rough terrain and cobblestones, or pavé, being with the also on the Tour of Flanders, the Gent-Wevelgem, and a number of other races that are happening at this point. But this is known as the Queen of the Classics, the Easter race. And it has received, if you win the race, you get a trophy that's a cobblestone. It's pretty funny. It has been an amazing race over the years. The people that have won this race, the collection is long and far. It's just kind of amazing to see some of the people I thought I had a winners and records. Here it is, right here. Winners by year. So we take a look, and you'll sometimes see the who's who of cycling out there, and then you'll sometimes see, who is this guy? I don't remember this guy. It goes all the way back to 1896. So I'm not going to go there right now. I'm going to kind of try to bring it up to a more current here so we can kind of take a look. But you will see some of the riders, 2022, last year was Dylan Van Baarle, and he is back this year. Let's see, 2017, it was Greg Van Avermaet, 1964, Peter Post. 2013, here's a name that we've seen over the years, Fabian Cancellara. We've got some class, Roger Devlaminek, 1972, 1974, 1975, 1977, Tom Boonen, 2005, 8, 9, 12. He's got a few of them there. Octave Lapiz, 1909, 1910, 1911. These are all multiple multiple finishers. And then we get the big names that we've heard of over the years. Eddie Merckx has won it three times, 68, 70, and 73. Francesco Mosier won it in 78, 79, and 80. Fabian Cancellara in 2006, 2010, 2013. So there, Sean Kelly in 1984 and 1986. There's some, just the names go on and on and on. Lots of really famous people that have done really well at the at the Paris-Roubaix. It's just a crazy race. It's just an absolute crazy race, and a lot of fun to watch. Even Peter Sagan in 2018 won it. If we go back and take a look at a few others back there. Stuart O'Grady in 2007, the famous, he was an Australian rider, I believe, yeah. He was Australian. It's just, it's quite a history. It's quite a history of riders, and it's a really, really exciting and special race, and it's coming up this weekend.
So. Are you talking about the Tour of Flanders?
No, this is the Paris-Roubaix.
I know, but the Tour of Flanders just happened.
I know, the Tour of Flanders is back. That's ancient history now. We're going on to current history now. We're going to future history, whatever.
But my friend Marissa wrote it.
You're right. Your friend Marissa wrote it.
Can
so
I read a
you
thing?
Can you can read a thing. First of all, explain who Marissa is.
Okay.
So that people in the audience know what you're talking about.
Okay.
So
I have a friend. I haven't actually met her in person, but I met her online. Her name is Marissa Axel. And she is she races bikes, and she also has a coaching company, she has a cycling collective online, and I'm part of the cycling. It's the competitive cycling collective, and we are and it's women, and she has a system online for the forgotten athlete, which is peri and postmenopausal women. And so she's a big fan of Stacy Sims, and
who is
Stacy Sims is a PhD a researcher, and both of their big idea is that women are not small men, so you have to train peri and postmenopausal women differently than you train men. And they have specific systems for doing that. That includes things like not riding a million hours and doing and lifting heavy S, lifting a lot of stuff. Anyway, so that's who she is. Anyway, so she went. I don't know if you realize that a lot of these races, the Paris-Roubaix and the Tour of Flanders, you can ride the sportif version of them, which means mm-hmm. that the day before, any old person can ride the course and it's supported. So she went to ride the Tour of Flanders. And so that was on Saturday. It's Saturday, March 25th. Or no, I'm sorry. Saturday, March 1st. Saturday, okay. April 1st.
Yes.
And she said, so this is what happened. She says, what a wild ride. Wind, rain, cobbles, Hellingen, cold. Tour of Flanders Sportif had it all. Started well, felt strong for 4 hours. By 55 miles, she'd endured one flat, cold and fingers not working great, and no brakes, and at least two close calls with not quite making the corners as her brakes disappeared, then couldn't stop shivering, so she made the dreadful decision to stop early at 55 miles. Disappointed, but also knew this was a possibility with rain and cold. She doesn't get along with rain and cold. Probably made the safest decision. More tales to come. There's a picture of her standing in line to get her bike fixed. It was a 45-minute long line.
Oh, no.
And in the rain and the cold, and she couldn't stop shivering, so yeah. She elected to bail.
Tip of the cycling cap to the mechanics that were working on bikes in that weather, by the way.
Right.
That's horrible.
So very exciting for
that's cool.
Marissa Axel, yes.
That's very cool. And so anyway, that was the Flanders last week, and it is part of the monuments. It's one of the many monument races that are out there. A lot of cobbles, and you know, it's all part of the lead up to the big grand tours that are coming up, which I will mention shortly here when we get to our events section here. Last thing on the Paris-Roubaix, though, so you understand the magnitude of this race. It is 257 kilometers, so it's quite a long race. It is hilly, And when they finish in the velodrome in Roubaix. So they come into the velodrome, they do a lap, maybe two laps, can't remember exactly, around the velodrome, and that is the finish of the race. Many times they come in and they are so covered in the road grime that's out there that they're almost it's almost hard to see who they are. So that's kind of cool too. It just adds a lot to it. I love it. It's a classic. I can't wait. And I will be watching it this weekend coming up because it's the Paris-Roubaix. It's one of those things that you do. So then we go back here and we are going to our events page because we are coming near the end of our show this week. And the events that are past now, Tour de Flanders. So we had the Paris-Roubaix is the next one on the list here. I forgot to delete these off of my schedule. We are really, really close to the queen of the classics. Other things that are happening just as far as the classics go, just so you know. Let me jump over to a local event, which is the Hop River Mountain Bike Race on April 15th. That's the first of the Connecticut Cycling Advancement Program Mountain Bike Series. That's a very cool thing, and it starts on April 15th. You can find all this information on Bike Reg if you're looking for it. In addition on that, let's see, what did I have here? We'll go to the classics next, or the big time classics, and the big time classics being the Giro d'Italia, which is going to be Saturday, May 6th, and that is going to start with an individual time trial this year, with a short finish climb to the top of the it's mostly flat with a short finish climb. The 110th edition of the 2023 Tour de France will begin on July 1st, and it'll be the second time it has taken place in Basque Country for a start, and it will finish in Paris around the 24th of July. The 78th edition of the Vuelta a España takes place in Barcelona August 26th, and the Grand Tour starts with a 14-kilometer team time trial in front of roaring city crowds before Stage 2 also starts and finishes in the capital of Spain. And so, anyway, those are the big classics coming up. Local events, again, going back now, May 17th, 2023, will be our Ride of Silence starting and finishing at the Mansfield Community Center parking lot and the Town Hall parking lot on 10 South Eagleville Road in Storrs, Connecticut. Our friend of Bicycle Talk and friend in general, Kevin Mahan, is involved with that. We are part of the International Ride of Silence. So go to the Facebook page and you can find us there, or you can go to the Ride of Silence and click on Connecticut and you'll find we are the Connecticut event. August 19th, the Steeplechase Bike Tour is coming up. So we've got that going on too. And these are, you know, good local events. If you want to see more about what we have out here, nice Connecticut roads, come on out and play with us. It's a good time. The Ride of Silence, by the way, is a 3.5-mile ride where everyone is quiet. It will be one of the few moments in your lives that you will you will find Pedal and Ron not saying anything. It's rare. It's a rare moment. And Billy, too. Kim says that the Hatfield Road Race is coming up on Saturday. Thanks, Kim. Appreciate that. Very, very good. So finishing points. Don't forget that there is the bicycle game also still in Hartford at the Historical Society. Definitely a cool thing to do. We are also, let's see, what else do we have that's coming up? I think I've kind of hit it all. So I'm just going to go right on to... I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. I want you to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and join the revolution of change. Remember, when representing your local governments, come with solutions, not complaints or problems. Positive beats negative every time. It's 2023. Initiate, participate, Ride your bike, tell everyone you know. And finally, take on that pedal and run challenge. And if you have a motorized vehicle, park it for a day and use your bike for just one day a week. You might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk. My name is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Take care, and thanks for listening. See you next week.